Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we get into our next segment, I've got an invitation for you. I want you to join me and author Mary Wimmer on August 24th for a live broadcast of our book club. We call it the book club Read Along with Larry, and we're broadcasting it from the 7-acre dairy farm. Fabulous place. It's nestled along the Sugar River in picturesque Paoli. And I'll talk there with Mary about her latest novel. It's called The Art of the Break. Great story. Follows a young woman's life in rural Wisconsin as she struggles to revive her family's cheese factory, get a stable home for her daughter, and find herself. And so that'll be at the 7 Acres Dairy, and it is quite a place. It's on the National Register for Historic Places. There's an inn. You could even stay overnight, I guess, if you would set that up. But anyway, we'd love to have you there for the show. It's a free event. Space is limited, though, so you need to register. And to register, go to WPR.org/presents. That's WPR.org/presents. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll have some snacks afterwards, and you can talk with Mary and me about whatever you want. But I want to switch gears to our next topic. Here's a daunting task for you. Solving environmental issues while growing food for millions of hungry Wisconsinites. And luckily, we've got several farmers up for that challenge, and we'll be talking about it. It's a group of Kewaunee and Door County farmers who are working together to increase sustainability. And have two guests for you. Lauren Bray, one of them, she's the managing director of Farmers for Sustainable Food based out of Green Bay. Lauren, welcome back, actually. It's been a couple years, but it's good to see your face.
Likewise. Thanks, Larry.
Also with us today, Paul Cornett. Paul is the owner of Cornett Dairy, founding member of Peninsula Pride Farms. And Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
It's great to have you here. So maybe you're a farmer. Tell us how you keep the environment in mind. What's your relationship with the land? What questions do you have for our guests? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Paul, let's start with you. You're part of a group called Peninsula Pride Farms. Tell us more about that group.
Well, back in 2016, a group of about three dozen or so farmers in Southern Door and Kewaunee counties got organized and decided we were going to try to take some ownership of some of the environmental issues that were going on in our area. And we were committed to the idea that the best way to find truly sustainable solutions for agriculture is to implement these solutions right on farm, giving farmers the flexibility to incorporate practices that are going to improve the environment and work for them, that you can grow along with improved environmental outcomes. And we've always been firmly committed to the idea that we can have a thriving agricultural community and a thriving and clean environment here in Northeast Wisconsin.
And Lauren Bry, you're managing director of a kind of a similar group, Farmers for Sustainable Foods. Maybe first talk about what you do there.
Sure. So Farmers for Sustainable Food is a collaborative effort to promote and support farmer-led solutions to today's environmental challenges, which Paul just mentioned. And we work with 7 farmer-led watershed groups in Wisconsin currently, and we're actually helping more get started in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So Peninsula Pride Farms is one of those farmer-led groups we support, where we help bring together farmers and partners in the agriculture and food value chains to work together on improving the local environment, but then taking that to the next level to gather the data to understand what impact we're having, not only environmentally, but in some cases also what's that return on investment of those conservation practices, and share that through the supply chain. But our focus is really on supporting the farmers in this space.
And so you are involved in research to help them in that task as well?
We are supporting, bringing partners to them to help them with their research. So our team isn't necessarily well-versed in that space, but bringing the right partners to the table to help those farmer-led conservation groups achieve their goals in their local communities.
Really interesting. Paul, Peninsula Pride Farms, and there's what, 11 farms? Am I correct in that?
So we just completed a study that involved 11 farms, but overall the group has grown from about 36 when we started 7 years ago to now we're serving close to 60 farms.
Oh, so quite a large number of farms. Well, and you mentioned the research, and maybe talk about that. This is the first year of a sustainability project. Give us some background. What's the goal of the sustainability project?
Well, from the time Peninsula Pride Farms formed, we knew we needed to engage the community and talk about the things that we were doing to protect the environment, to take care of our cows. But we also knew there were plenty of opportunities out there to improve our practices. But we couldn't just talk about it. We needed to find ways to collect data and measure the changes we were making. So along the way, we did get involved with Farmers for Sustainable Food. And just like Lauren said, they have connected us with experts, scientists, engineers, people that I can't hardly imagine how we would have come into connection with these people otherwise. They did put us in touch with Houston Engineering out in Minnesota. And they've helped guide us through our first, actually it's been a 3-year study using the FieldPrint platform. It's modeling software that helps measure overall environmental outcomes. And we've just released 1 year of study results, and years 2 and 3 are on the way.
So the study, did you have a sort of a before and after kind of situation here? And what were you checking for?
Well, Field to Market has 7 or 8 different environmental quality factors that you can look at. And we focused on 7 of those. Greenhouse gas score, energy use, land use, biodiversity, water quality, soil loss, a number of different metrics. And they don't necessarily relate real well to each other. Some might have large numbers, some might have small numbers, some a high score is good, some a low score is good. But it was by far the most comprehensive look we've taken at our entire operations. And really assess where we've come in 7 years and where we can go. As far as whether or not it was before and after, we all probably set our own farms up in the study a little bit differently, but that is sort of what I did. I put some of my more progressive conservation-minded fields up against the traditional plow in the fall, scratch in the spring type of system, just to sort of see how big a change I've made. Well, I know how big a change I've made. It's taken a lot of work, but what the impact was and what kind of outcomes I got. And I was pretty pleased.
with the oven. We'll probably get to some of those data. Lauren, how is this, from your point of view, how has this whole thing been working?
We are just so excited to be able to support farmers like Paul, others in Peninsula Pride, and in our other sustainability projects that we've either have underway for multiple years. We're currently launching some, and we actually have one that's been completed. And anyone who's interested can view those reports that are available on our website, farmersforsustainablefood.com. But it's just really rewarding to be able to work with farmers who want to take their conservation to the next level. This is all about not only doing those practices in the field, but then collecting the data, modeling it to understand what impact are these practice changes actually having on environmental metrics or on metrics that are important to me as a farmer. So not only through this project have we looked at field level comparisons and allowed the farms to understand where they compare to one another, but also state and national benchmarks. So stoking some of that competitive spirit of how can I get better and how do I compare to my peers. But there's also a water quality component, because as Paul mentioned, that's been a main focus of the group, and why the group started was how can they help improve some concerns in the local community. So there's been an additional amount of work done through using a second tool that's complementary to the field print platform called the Prioritized Target Measure application that allowed us to look at a watershed level where these farms are to understand what's kind of a baseline condition or what would we typically see from an environmental perspective with those traditional farming practices compared to the practices we know farmers in Peninsula Pride are implementing, and what are the outcomes, how are we improving water quality. So it's just been really exciting to support those farmers, bring some partners to the table, and continue to document the impact that farms are having in improving our local environment.
You know, I can see many values to this, but Paul, in your mind, what's the incentive for farmers to participate in a sustainability project like this one?
Well, like we said, that was the whole purpose of our organization, was to take some ownership of the environmental situation in our neighborhood. My family's been farming in this area for, you know, going back to the late 1800s, depending on what branch you climb out on the family tree. So we're a part of this community. We share the same natural resources with our neighbors. Many of our neighbors are our friends or extended family, and we want to pass those resources on to the next generation, just the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
And we knew we were working hard at it, but until you try to collect some data and really put some numbers behind things, you don't really know exactly how to quantify that,
and
where to go next. So that was a big benefit for me.
We're going to continue the conversation with Lauren Bry and with Paul Cornett. But we need to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. You can join in, number 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mailer for the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here. We're talking about a group of Kewaunee and Door County farmers who are trying out a new sustainable ways to farm. Lots of different things that they have been working on with Paul Cornett. He is the owner or co-owner of Cornett Dairy. It's also a founding member of Peninsula Pride Farms. And Lauren Bry is managing director of Farmers for Sustainable Food based out of Green Bay. And Farmers for Sustainable Food has been working with Peninsula Pride Farms on some research and practices. And as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in the conversation. Which new sustainable practices have you seen farmers practicing in your area? If you're a farmer, how are you involved in sustainable practices? What are your thoughts? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email, email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Paul, an emailer wondered about your own farm operation. Tell us about your farm.
Sure. Like I said before the break, my family's been farming in this area since the 1800s. But the actual farmstead where I'm sitting today, my dad bought in 1972. Had 30 cows back then. It grew to 70. Then that barn burned in 1995 when I was a senior in high school. We rebuilt a freestall barn and a milking parlor in the mid-90s there. And we farmed that way until just a few years ago. In 2017, actually maybe a couple years earlier, my brother Tom and I completed the buyout of Mom and Dad. And we put Laylee robots in and built a new barn in 2017. And so today we are milking 360 or so cows and farming about 1,000 acres of land where we grow pretty much all our own feed and where we try to take care of our cows and the environment.
And you have some, I know you have some goals. At one point, I think Clara was telling me you're interested or have a goal of becoming 100% no-till.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. It's definitely a several year phase in. What I'm learning is that the best time to start that process is to kind of come in after a hay field is ready to be destroyed, after 3 or 4 years where you've already been without tillage. Then you can maybe go in and plant green into that living hay field and then terminate it. And the weather has to cooperate and it takes time to build up the soil health and the soil structure you need to be 100% no-till, but maybe I'll get there, hope to get there.
Well, the research that you've done, I mean, it's over this is the first year completed of a 3-year project, and maybe you could comment on some of the results. I don't know, Lauren, do you want to pipe in here for a minute?
Sure. I can kick it off with a little bit about the group results as a whole, and then Paul can comment on what he's seen on his own farm. But really exciting that we're seeing good outcomes. We're seeing what we hope to see from conservation practices, and that Peninsula Pride Farms members have improved water quality. Specifically by a score of 2.8, which means fewer nutrients were able to leave the field from the surface and or subsurface and reach waterways. Also, we know the farmers are implementing a lot of practices. On average, there's more than 2 conservation practices being implemented on each of the enrolled fields. So that means a lot of the farmers are stacking practices. So it's not just doing one thing, they're doing multiple conservation practices on one field, which is helping amplify those conservation benefits. So those are just a few of the good outcomes, and I would encourage people who are really interested in that data and the detail to check out the full year one report on our website, farmersforsustainablefood.com. You can find it there, and we'll have the year 2 and 3 report out soon as well. But Paul, what are you seeing on your farm?
I would echo what Lauren said about water quality. That was the group's original focus. That was my original focus. And as I said earlier, not every metric relates to the other real well. But whether, for example, if you're talking about soil erosion, you want a low number, obviously. using a stacked practices system of cover crops followed by no-till planting, we're seeing water quality scores improve basically by a factor of two. So soil loss might be cut in half. If it's a different metric where a high score is desirable, it will be about double using these new conservation practices as opposed to the old plow it in the fall, scratch it in the spring type system.
And so we're talking, and you know, we're what's the average loss on farmlands for the in the country? I think it's at somewhere around 3 tons per acre per year.
I think three and a half is sort of the state benchmark. And well, I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag. We've got numbers on years two and three that shows we're about a ton below that on the fields that we have in our study. So I think we're making a nice dent in that issue.
Man, you think about a ton of soil, and then you add that up per acre for
a lot of dump truck loads, Larry.
Thousands of acres. We're talking about a lot of dirt that's not washing into the. And you know, our soils are so darn high in phosphorus to begin with. And so you are definitely dropping the amount of phosphorus that winds up in our waters.
And hopefully, you know, eventually cutting down on some of these algae blooms too. Just 1 pound of phosphorus, I've heard, can feed somewhere around 500 pounds of blue-green algae. So you start doing the math, and it
makes a huge,
starts to add up. Yeah,
it does. Gary and Ripon has something. Let's go there. Gary, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. By going this route, though, do you feel like aren't you putting a pretty severe limitation on how much money a farmer can make?
No.
There's definitely some startup costs. One of the things Peninsula Pride Farms has done from the beginning is identifying key practices that we think are highly adaptable to our area, our soils, our climate, and trying to promote them, not just through education and outreach, but with our cost share program that will hopefully help defray the costs of some of the growing pains or the trial and error process. And that does help. And you hope that it helps the farmers take off, try new things, and grow those practices on their farm, stack them on individual fields. But a lot of these conservation practices, it costs me a lot to go out and run a big tractor across a field in the fall, slowly pulling a plow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some cost savings too. The finances, they haven't been too prohibitive, I wouldn't say, this year. A lot of drought, some of the cover crop, green planted fields, they don't look the best, honestly, but other years they've looked fantastic. So every year is different. Every field is different. And it's all about rolling with the punches.
Yeah. Lauren, you want to chime in?
Yeah, thank you for that question, because I think it brings up a really important point that sustainability has to have three aspects. It can't just be environmental. There also has to be economical sustainability and social sustainability. So when we're doing projects and programs and trying to help farmers change the practices on the land for those environmental outcomes, maybe that's our main focus, but at the end of the day, they have to stay in business in order to farm. So it all has to work together. And that's part of our work at Farmers for Sustainable Food. And some of our sustainability projects is trying to put some financials to conservation. Our pilot project in Southwest Wisconsin has done that with several farms, and we're looking at expanding that financial aspect of these projects with groups like Peninsula Pride to try to put more numbers behind not only making the change from the environmental perspective, but what does that mean for your farm's financials? So definitely noted, but again, as Paul mentioned, Peninsula Pride and many other farmer-led watershed groups or other organizations do offer cost share to support farmers in trialing some of these different practices that maybe they haven't used. So I highly encourage anybody listening that might be curious about trying something to look into cost share programs in your region, because there definitely is funding available, and not only the importance of that funding support, but then finding those neighbor farmers or local experts, whether it's through NRCS or County Conservation Office, who can help give you some advice on making some of those practice changes.
And you mentioned that you had done some financial, a little bit of at least initial financial work in another area. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so there's four farms that have participated in 4 years of data collection on the financial side with the project in Southwest Wisconsin. And the current results are showing with fields and the conservation implemented that we're seeing stable yields and positive returns per acre. So it's a good story, and we're, you know, that's what we want to see. So we're hoping to, again, get more data around that, because I recognize it's a small subset, but just trying to provide that reassurance to some farmers. It might take a few years, but with some persistency and finding those right resources to help you as you face some of the challenges and navigate those, you can still have a successful crop with some of the conservation practices.
Let's take another call from Gene in Menominee. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yes. One of the aspects that this group is exploring is the greenhouse gas emissions for the various agricultural practices. Have they discovered any that actually end up with a net zero, or are they all greenhouse gas emissions and it's just a matter of degree, and so that they're trying to encourage less greenhouse gas emissions rather than embracing zero?
Yeah, good question. Paul, do you want to start, and then we'll get Lauren in as well?
I guess I can only speak for my farm, and the group has not been focused on greenhouse gas emissions and issues as long as we have water issues. But at this point, for me, it's a matter of reducing emissions and also sequestering carbon. That was one of the notes I made looking through my report, is that my greenhouse gas scores are lower when I use cover crops than versus just no-till alone, for example. It's also, you know, when you till ground, in addition to the exhaust you're blowing from your equipment, you're breaking down organic matter and releasing carbon into the atmosphere. So you've got the potential to sequester as well as reduce emissions. As far as getting to net zero, I'm not there yet, but maybe that's where Lauren can pick it up and go from there.
Yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
Sure. I can't speak to like what practice might be the best for greenhouse gas emissions reductions, but I do know there's a lot of industry research happening in this space. For example, through our National Dairy Checkoff, which is an organization that all dairy farmers support, they are doing a lot of programs trying to explore new technologies and currently available technologies on farm and what it might look like to get to a net zero from the dairy perspective specifically. I can also share that through the farmer-led groups that are supported by Farmers for Sustainable Food and the yearly conservation practice survey that we work with those groups on, we know that from all the conservation practices implemented by farmers participating in those groups, in 2022, they reduced greenhouse gas emissions by 55,585 tons, which is equal to emissions from over 11,000 cars driven for a year. So there are some models available to try to get us to estimates about the improvements in those spaces. And To Paul's point earlier, that's, I think, an area that groups are going to start focusing a little more now that we've made some progress on water quality and know we're headed in the right direction there. It's kind of what's that next goal and that next target. And I think through some of the research currently happening, greenhouse gas will be one of those topics.
Jean, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Kel in Sugar Camp, we go to you. Hi, Kel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm very ignorant about dairy farming. I was wondering if you're able to incorporate the manure into your growing fields with controlled runoff, and also if you have to worry about a buildup of steroids or antibiotics in the soil. I have no idea what dairy cows need just to live. And as well, the other question I had was, are there perennial crops that you can use to feed your dairy cows? I have no idea what's out there. Hmm. So I was just curious.
Thank you for calling. Well, Paul, what do you got there?
Sure. I mean, perennial crops and winter annual crops, absolutely. Stuff that stays green over the winter. Alfalfa, the quote-unquote hay fields are perennials. We typically get 3 to 4 years out of an established hay field. As far as antibiotics and steroids building up in the soil, that's not anything that we're addressing. I don't think it's the type of thing that anyone's looking at, as far as I know, or a real concern. What was the third? Was there a third point?
Yeah, the ability to incorporate manure, which I think you can speak to with what kind of practices that the farmers in your area are using.
Yeah, that's one thing that's changed a lot since Peninsula Pride Farms gained traction, is manure spreading has really spread out into a more of a spoon feeding type situation. We will put manure on those hay fields after we harvest them at a very low rate, something the equivalent liquid manure at the equivalent of 1 or 2 tenths of an inch of rain, really a safe application. We're also, a number of us are using what we call low disturbance manure incorporation in the fall, where, again, instead of that traditional use a big shank to inject the manure deep into the ground, make it look like a rough plowed field. Instead, it's a series of discs that leave something that looks like a fairly smooth seed bed in decent conditions. And that really enables you to go in there pretty easily and establish a cover crop after, say, harvesting corn silage and applying some liquid manure in the fall. That's one of the areas where I think we've made a lot of progress.
Kate had emailed us and was wondering about the size of these farms. She's worried about Kewaunee County and water quality issues. Are there some large farms, or wondering what's the size of the farms that are involved in this?
We have all sizes of farms. We have farms with thousands of cows, and I'm in there at 300, and there are some who I think have less. We certainly have members who have only 40, 50, 60 cows. I don't know if they all participated in the survey, but I think we're, for the most part, we are doing the same practices. We are engaged in the same business. And I think we need to have farms of all sizes. We need to have that diversity to feed a growing world on a shrinking land base.
Yeah, yeah. And here we are about out of time. Lauren, I know the results of this research, which to me were pretty striking, are, you mentioned earlier, are available. And maybe you could tell us again how people can take a look at those results.
Yes, check out our website, farmersforsustainablefood.com, and you can check out the sustainability project results, our progress report that talks overall about the different farmer-led groups we're supporting and the variety of sustainability projects that we have happening.
Farmersforsustainability.com, did I get it right?
FarmersForSustainableFood.com. Ah,
all right. FarmersForSustainableFood.com. All right. See, it's a good thing that we repeat this. I want to thank you both very much. Hopefully we can do this down the road. There's, you know, more years to go on this. And certainly it's a very, very important topic. Lauren, Paul, thank you again. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. Nice talking to you.
Good talking with you as well. Lauren Bry is Managing Director of Farmers for Sustainable Food based out of Green Bay. Paul Cornett, co-owner of Cornett Dairy. It's a founding member of Peninsula Pride Farms. Great to have both of them with us. And just a quick reminder, our Read Along with Larry will be broadcasting our show from 7 Acre Dairy Company in Paoli, a very picturesque place, and we'll be talking with Mary Wimmer about her book, The Art of the Break. And you can come. Just go to register, go to wpr.org/presents. And we'll be talking more about that as time goes on. Talking Birds on the program tomorrow. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.